This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. Originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
The Dice Men Cometh!
I don't know about you, Trent, but I have really noticed how life is imitating art more and more these days, and in particular, when I say art, I mean board games.
Tell me more.
Well, I'm reminded of a game of Battlestar Galactica.
Sure.
Where
you never know who the traitor is.
Well, it's
who's the Cylon? Who's the fracking Cylon?
It's when the Admiral and the President become the same person. They have the nukes.
Oh God.
And then you find out that they are a Cylon and they've been working against you all the time, and I'm feeling like that life at the moment is a bit of that combined with Twilight Struggle.
Yep.
And all I hope and pray is that President Trump remembers that both North Korea and South Korea are battleground countries. And if he causes a coup there while we're at DEFCON 2, then boosh.
It's all over. If you feel like you've stepped into some kind of alternate reality, well, no, it's real, and it's The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name's Trent, and that is Mark.
And I am Mark, and we also want to say thank you so much to our proud sponsors, Polymorph Games and Hobbies. They proudly support Australia's finest gaming podcast, and we proudly support them for all their fantastic range of amazing games at outstanding prices.
What are we talking about tonight?
Trent, we're going to talk about a couple of games we have been playing. A big new one from Kickstarter, Vast, The Crystal Caverns, which is a very, very different game. I'm going to talk about my recent experience with my son playing an expansion to the DC Deck Builder. And then we are going to have a chat about the mother of all games. Everyone's talking about it. It's just climbing up and up and up the board game hotness. It's Gloomhaven.
Yeah, all right. I've got serious reservations about this. All right, all that and more on a nerdy night on The Dice Men Cometh as we throw a leg over a classic here.
And speaking of outshined, I'm here with Trent. You're going to outshine me with your knowledge of Soundgarden, I'm sure, because to me, I don't know a lot about them. I just know I love them.
Oh, classic stuff.
And so that was Soundgarden with Outshined on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You're with The Dice Men Cometh, proudly supported by Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Amazing games, outstanding service.
G'day, Neil. He's actually done us a little favour.
He has.
Well, not just us, but all of our listeners as well. Which means you,
are going to let you know later on how you can save. I mean, Polymorph Games has amazing prices anyway, but we're going to save you even more money with an exclusive code coming soon in the show.
But in the meantime, for episode 162, we're going to talk about what we've been playing lately, and it's something rather special, and that is Vast, The Crystal Caverns, which was a Kickstarter board gaming hit from 1 or 2 years back.
I didn't think it was that long. I thought it was just either very late 2016 or now.
Not sure. Leader Games is the name of the publisher. It's just had its second crowd-funded printing through Kickstarter. The reprint delivered, it's a straight reprint, although there are some little expansion bits. The straight reprint has been delivered.
Excuse you.
We can edit that out.
Yeah.
Nope, not going to do it.
There's some new expansion-y miniature-y bits and some new characters which are going to come later in the year. Ooh. But in the meantime, we've still got the original game that's been delivered right on schedule, actually, to muck around with. What is it all about? Vast is the ultimate asymmetric dungeon crawl. Is that true, do you think?
Yeah, and the only sort of the truly asymmetric games that I have played in the past have
by all asymmetric, been your... we mean that every player is doing something different.
The classic example to me is your war games, and it's your like huge, big Virgin Queen type war games where everyone, like almost everyone, is playing a different game, and I have never seen that in a board game. until this.
Yeah, well, and this is greatly condensed down from that, isn't it?
But it's amazing because it literally, and I guess that's the challenge, isn't it? Is you've literally got to teach 3 or 4 or 5 different versions of the game when you've got all new players.
And we'll get to that. Look, so this plays 1 to 5, Mark, can be played solo. 5 roles with completely different powers and rules, all of them interacting in unique ways. And you're playing each character with different goals, and you're going through the dungeon as the cave tiles are placed to grow the crystal caverns that you're wandering through, fighting each other, picking up treasure. Eventually, you run out of cave tiles, and so then the cave starts collapsing on everyone, and that pretty much signals the end of the game, unless it's been won in the meantime.
And so, did you mention someone actually plays the cave?
Well, not just the cave, but the 5 different characters. You've got the knight, which is trying to kill a dragon and or gather some treasure. You've got a dragon, which is trying to sort of wake up and grow powerful enough to escape. You can think one of the main ways you can do that is by eating goblins. You've got the goblins that you can play who want to kill the knight. There's a thief who just wants to steal everyone's stuff. And a player plays the cave, who manipulates the map and the cave tiles and ultimately crushes everybody.
And it's sort of like saying, you're going to play the board.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you're going to play the board. But, I think you've played this twice. I've only played it once. Apart from sort of getting your head around the rules, I mean, everyone enjoyed their game, even though they were all so different. Even the guy, it was Leon, the game that I played, who was playing the board.
Each player gets their own board. In fact, a little sort of play board, which has got your little tokens and everything on it. It's all very nice, and it's all reasonably clear, I think, but it is a bitch to learn and to teach, because you do have to basically teach 5 entirely different games. And while none of them are particularly complicated, I mean, I think you could pitch this quite young. I think there are some roles in this that a kid could play, and it's certainly very kid friendly in its appearance.
So you're talking about 10 or something like that,
something like that. My daughter would certainly be into this, but there's 5 different versions of this, and each role is entirely different.
Yeah.
So the knight, for example, and it's a small thing. The knight's a female character in this, and it's just a very, very small thing, but it's a nice touch. She starts with 2 hero cubes, just little wooden cubes on her board that represent her available actions, and she's got to accumulate grit points, which give her extra cubes and obviously extra actions that go with that. And there's a few special abilities thrown in with that, including a magical shield, bow and arrow for range attacks, and a bomb for the dragon.
Yes.
You've played the dragon.
Yeah, and grit, I mean, it's a funny term, but it's really sort of like XP, isn't it?
Well, it's for basically achieving...
Like you're getting tougher.
Exactly, yeah. The dragon's got to shake off the effects of their sleep cubes by collecting treasure, eating goblins. Also, the dragon's got some very powerful special abilities, those power cards.
Yeah, because you've got a deck of cards, and you're basically drawing, depending on where you're at with your, I think it's like your health and your, as you're putting down more of the, getting rid of those sloth cubes and turning them into abilities, that they let you draw more cards.
Right.
But yeah, you've got, on the cards, you've got a flame, jaws, and a foot,
and a wing or something.
Yeah, that's right. A wing, flames, and a claw.
But what I did
and
like
different combos of those cards that give you sort of different actions you can take.
But they're really. But every time the dragon came around to your turn, it felt like something seismic had happened in the game, as I suppose it should.
It's a freaking dragon, man.
And there's plenty of good flamey goodness with that nice little dice with the area effects on it. So that's the knight and the dragon. The goblins, they're totally different again, and probably the weirdest role, I think.
Yeah, there's like 3 tribes, and they're all sort of doing different stuff.
You're trying to build up the population of each of the tribes, the fangs, the bones, and the eye tribes. You've got war cards, which give you monsters and secrets as well, if you're the goblins. The goblins can also ambush everybody else from the dark tiles, because the tiles get laid out at dark at first and you have to sort of turn them over to illuminate them. But every tile has got a goblin symbol on it that the goblins can pounce on.
Yeah, they basically sort of spawn out. But yeah, they seem to me to be the... Maybe apart from the caves are like the most complicated thing. You've got the three different tribes, they all have their own populations. You've got those cards, the monsters and the secrets and traps. I don't know, and the game we played, Garth was the goblins. He seemed to be always having a lot to do. Whereas as a dragon, I was very thankful that, you know, I had my cards, but that was really all it was just who do I roast next?
The thief is... deathless.
Sneaky.
And has got the whole point of the thief's go is that they've got to try and accumulate 6 treasures and stash them, and that breaks their deathless curse.
Yes.
That also means that you're being repeatedly squished by the dragon or killed by all the other players, but you just pop back to life at the start of your next turn. Like the knight, you can manipulate your stats, and in everyone's fair game, you can steal stuff off everybody. Yes. It's a great role. I had fun playing the thief. And then there is the cave.
Yeah.
So there's no overlord or DM role in this dungeon crawler, but this role, I guess, resembles it.
A little bit, yeah.
You can play Vast without a cave player, in which case the cave's just generated randomly from a stack of tiles. Mm. Otherwise, it's actually possible to manipulate the tiles in a way to spread stuff out as far as possible. And if you can get lots of treasure out on the map that's left untouched and make it difficult for players to get them, then that gives the cave player tokens that they draw from a little bag.
Yes.
Again, different to everyone else, and they can create more mayhem. But ultimately, the goal is to get as many of your tiles out as you can as quickly as you can, and then the tiles start coming off as the cave collapses. Yes. And that's really the only way to win if you are the cave player, which does make it, I think, a little bit tough.
Certainly, I think the cave has it tough. And the other thing I remember in the game we played where Leon was the cave and you were the thief.
Who won? Did we point that out? It's so rare that I get to point
and
that
it's
out.
Funny because my response was, that thief is broken. But I realised later what it was really was, you know, you've got, and this is the interaction between the roles. Leon, as the cave, has got to put out treasures because the more treasures he has on the board, the more access he gets to tokens.
That's it.
As the dragon, one of the ways of getting rid of sloth cubes was to collect treasures. So, of course, I wanted to pick them up. As the thief, one of the ways that you win the game is by getting those 6 treasures. So you wanted to pick them up. So poor Leon, he's trying to put all these treasures out because he wanted to expand his powers. And every turn, either you or I were picking them up.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't able to expand, those treasures were really close to the start. And as the thief, you've got to get the treasures, and then you basically got to pop out of the cave and you stash them.
Yeah.
And then that way, when you're killed, you don't get to lose them. There was sort of that bit of a loop happening where he couldn't put the treasures any further out, which meant you had it easier
to
get them back.
Well, it wasn't my fault that Leon wasn't playing properly. But that's just one example of how...
Yeah, the interaction between the roles, yeah.
And that's why I think this is actually genius design,
this
game. But there are problems with it.
Mm.
And I'll put it out there right now that I do love this game, but there are some issues. The cave role is a little undercooked. I feel it's quite difficult to get right. All credit to Leon where it's due.
Yes.
It's hard to win. It's a sort of ultimate timer for the game.
Mm.
And you're only going to win if everybody else has failed to. I find you'd have to be really clever to manipulate the cave effectively and turn everybody else against each other for you to just be left Eddie the Eagle, last man standing at the end.
And it's probably...
Not Eddie the Eagle, Steve, what's his name? The ice skater.
Ice skate guy.
I was mixing my sporting metaphors. I shouldn't even try a sporting metaphor, should I?
No. Some sportsing. I think it's the role that probably most benefits from repeated plays to actually understand how the tiles work, how the roles work, how those tokens work. There's a lot happening there, and I think repeat plays would help the cave probably more than they would those other roles.
I also think the knight is not as easy as it would first appear. Because the knight's sort of presented, it's kind of the most obvious role in a way.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's that easy to win with.
Well, I guess you've got to maybe more of a single focus than everyone else has, because you're really, you're just focused on killing the dragon. But of course, the dragon is really hard to kill. And he's quite powerful and roasts you almost every turn. But then you've got those annoying bloody goblins that are just like nibbling at your heels the whole time.
Although the dragon is trying to kill the goblins though.
Yeah, although, you know, that's, I guess, a secondary thing, because as the dragon, the last thing you want is the knight to get powerful. So even though you don't win if you kill the knight, you want to hamstring the knight enough to stop it from getting close to killing you. So once again, you've got these multiple interactions within players. It's tricky, but it is very, very clever.
We played it with five players, and I felt that it maybe went a little long. So I think four players might be a good sweet spot for this.
Oh, look, I didn't mind it. And I guess, firstly, hey, our games always go long.
That's true, especially when we're learning five different rule sets.
That's the other thing, is the fact that we were all learning literally five different games, I sort of forgave it a bit, and I didn't feel like it overstayed its welcome a lot.
And I think they've actually, because everyone's got their player board and everyone's got a cheat sheet that comes with the game as well, so they've really done what they can to make that easy.
The graphic design is fantastic.
It's all very clear.
The art is great. You've got sweet little, I had a sleeping dragon meeple and an awake dragon meeple. The presentation of this game is really great. I really liked it.
The other big tick in its favour is its replayability, because you can play, as I say, 1 to 5 with almost any combination of roles. And every role has also got variants, which we didn't even get into.
That's right.
Yeah. So, depending on what roles people want to play, they can mix it up. And you can adjust not only can you have variants, but you can also adjust the difficulty. So you can, and it all comes with little difficulty cards.
Yes.
So let's say if I do want to play with the kids, okay, you can give Dad a difficulty card that, you know, hamstrings him. So yeah.
And am I right in saying there's extra roles coming?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. When the actual second edition Kickstarter fulfills later in the year, three new roles. There's a ghost, a ghoul, and something called the Nightmare Unicorn.
That's right.
That replaces the dragon.
I was going to say. Yeah. So this is not meaning you're going to play it with like 7 or 8, does it? Because that is just beyond belief.
Not sure. Yeah. Anything's possible. There's even a campaign option.
Ooh.
But it's really just, you know, playing through the game a bunch of times with different skill levels.
So, okay.
Vast is the game, and Crystal Caverns is the sort of subtitle. And I suppose from that you could infer that there may be future expansions, maybe a different dungeon or some kind of different environment. Perfectly feasible.
Vast the Crusty Canyon.
I'm not going there. No, get your mind out of the gutter, Trent. There's no end to the possible expansions you could do for this. New tiles, different characters, and can't wait.
We'll endless tweakability.
Definitely get this out when the Kickstarter fulfills later in the year again. And it's, I think it is one of those games that will reward repeat plays, especially as the rule sets become familiar, which, of course, is always a problem for us.
Well, you know, we do have a lot of games to play. I think we're maybe going to talk about that a bit more coming up shortly.
You've been playing your own stuff too, haven't you?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, you've been out freelancing. Mark will tell us all about that. It's the Dice Man Cometh Edge Radio 99.3 FM. A band called DAG, Nowhere to Go, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You're listening to a show about board games and card games with Trent and Mark tonight. What's his name?
Garth.
Yeah, Garth, that guy. Yeah, he's something about wanting to spend time with his family or something. I don't know.
And Leon?
Who?
Making chocolate?
Not sure. Tonight's show and all our shows at the moment proudly supported by our friends, particularly Neil, at Polymorph Games and Hobbies, a.k.a. polymorphgames.com.au. Proud support. What's that say? Proud supporters of Australia's finest gaming podcast. Who's that?
That's us.
Is it?
It is.
Okay. You've been playing stuff lately.
I have. So
on
your
own? Yeah, freelancing?
Well, no, not on my own. Okay. But away from you guys.
Ooh.
So, because
I don't have any friends away from us.
Well,
don't lie to me.
I brought one into the world. My son.
You're forcing your son to play games with you.
Well, we went away. We had a little holiday away.
Was Pathfinder the solo experience not enough? You have to force your son to endure these games?
Look, you know, he should be thankful. I took him away mountain biking, way into the far reaches of Tasmania. And so, you know, we stayed in a local pub, which was fantastic. I highly recommend the Worldborough Pub. If you stay there, say hi to the barmaids for me because they are lovely. Lovely young lasses. But we had a bit of time to kill, and I had recently purchased, so I've talked in the past on this show about the DC deck builder. Now, I'm a superheroes fan, and I'm a deck building fan. And with your deck building and your superheroes, you've got your two choices.
Sure.
You've got your Marvel Legendary, which is an awesome game, and so many squillions of expansions. Just heard they've announced a new X-Men expansion, which is going to be the biggest expansion ever, apparently. I did see someone selling the base game and almost every expansion the other day on one of those Facebook groups. They wanted $600 for the whole lot.
Uh-huh.
I told him I was interested if he threw in a couple of jousting sticks. I don't know if he got the joke or not. But so
the DC one, is this tied into the new films at all? Have they launched it to sort of coincide with their effort to try and reboot that miserable, horrible, bloated, fatuous movie universe?
No, it actually came out around just after the time of the new 52.
Ah.
So it hasn't had the DC reboot of the reboot or anything like that. But I have the base game. I have the other base game, which is the Heroes Unite, which is basically another base game with just all different heroes and more cards. I have the Arrow TV expansion because I love the Arrow TV show, although it doesn't really work in the game, but never mind. I finally I picked up the Crisis Expansion 1.
All right, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yes, or one of the crises.
There's been a whole bunch of crises.
Right. And, in fact, I think there are four crisis expansions for this game. But the first one, and I guess what everyone was always crying out for in this game is, for those who don't know, in the base game, let's say I'm playing Superman, you're playing Batman.
Sure.
We're fighting villains. I'm Batman. Getting superpowers. But we're also fighting each...
No, really. I'm Batman.
I'm Batman. We're also playing against each other. It's a competitive game. And a lot of people could never really get their heads around it. So Marvel Legendary is completely cooperative when you play heroes.
Because I would never have thought that Batman would fight Superman.
Yeah, who'd imagine? And so firstly, I always said, well, duh. Batman v Superman.
Sure.
But it's not like we're coming out punching each other. It's more like, hey, Batman. Oh, no, you're Batman. Hey,
I'm Batman.
Hey, Batman.
Yes, I'm Batman.
Let's have a bet to see who can beat the most villains.
It's Batman, not Batman.
And, you know, the winner buys the beers. It's like that level of competition where we don't actually go biffo against each other. It's who can get the most victory points, of course.
Well, that sounds ridiculous.
But by beating the most villains. And for me, I was always like, I don't have a problem with that. I can totally see the Flash and Aquaman sitting around saying, hey, you know, I'll bet you a case that I can go and kick more villains' backsides than you can.
So is that still the case in this new version of it?
So no. So that's why I said this was why it was the expansion that people were crying out for, because this one introduced a co-op mode. So now it's not Batman v Superman. It's Batman plus Superman.
Well, that makes more sense, I think.
And so what it does is it introduces a couple of different things. So firstly, just like any great expansion does, it gives you extra stuff. So you get six new playable heroes. So obviously in the original game, you've got the big seven, Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, and then you get a...
What about Cyborg?
And Cyborg. Yeah. I've run out of fingers. And then you get a Martian Manhunter promo. So that gave you eight. So in this new version, you get Constantine, Zatanna, Swamp Thing, Animal Man, Robin, and Green Arrow as your playable heroes.
It's a bit of the Dark Justice League flavour, the bit of the Vertigo stuff.
Sort of second tier. But then what you've got is you've got eight new versions, eight crisis versions of those original eight heroes. Because the original heroes, they didn't really play well together. The aforementioned Batman v Superman as an example. So they've got different abilities that are more geared towards the co-op game. You've also got new versions of the original 12 or 11 supervillains with different sort of powers, again, that work better in the co-op mode.
This sounds more like a standalone. Is this an expansion, or can you just start off with
No, it is only expansion, because you've got the new copies of the heroes, you've got the new copies of the supervillains, which are your main villains, but then you've also got, you've got 32 new main deck cards, but your real big main deck that you're drawing everything from, or that you're buying cards from, is sort of, you know, like around 120, 130 cards. So it's not replacing very much of that. It's adding a few little extra things. But then it introduces also these crisis cards, or as I like to call them, crises. And the way you...
you mean the actual word for them? Yeah, go on. Yeah. So, no, I applaud your grammar. Well done.
I'm trying to be good. So in the normal game, what you're doing is you've got five cards in the middle, very much like Ascension, that are a mix of villains, superpowers, heroes, equipment, and locations. Mm-hmm. And you're buying the cards that are good for you, so everything except the villains. You're using the same currency, if you like, to defeat villains. And then when you get enough of the currency number, which is power, they call it power, you can then have a crack at the supervillains, which are much harder to kill. And basically you work through a stack of supervillains to get to the end of the game. You add up your victory points at the end, which you get from your supervillains and a few cards in your main deck. With the co-op mode, though, what you have is you have the cards in the middle, you have the crises, and you have the crisis supervillains. Mm-hmm. You can't attack the crisis until you defeat all the villains that happen to be out in the main cards, where there might be none, there might be five, because they're all coming out randomly.
So you've got to take out Darkseid or whatever before you can tackle the cosmic anomaly.
Yeah, then you've got to defeat the crises, because not until you defeat the crises can you attack the supervillain. Now, this is not a short game at the best of times.
It doesn't sound it.
It probably plays... I think most of the games I've played would be about 2 hours, which is long-ish for a deck builder. What the crisis mode does, apart from making it co-op, is make it drag, because you've got to do A before you can do B, then you've got to do B before you can do C. Then when you do C, you get a new B and C, and then A starts again. And because you're working through, depending on the number of players, you're working through either, say, from somewhere like 8 to up to 12 or 13 villains, with those three steps every time, it just takes longer.
And this is only two players?
Well, you can play up to four.
Okay.
And you have less villains with more players, but because everyone's taking their turn.
Yeah, yeah.
And, because the only co-op bit is really against the crisis, where most crises need you to all do something at once to defeat it. It might be to trash a card or give up some superheroes, or some of them a little bit tricky. But that's the only bit where you do it all at once. Everything else is it happens on my turn, it happens on your turn. Oh, have I got enough to defeat the supervillain? No, too bad. Then it comes around to you. Have you got enough? It's not like we can throw in together and both attack it at once. So it's really just drawing out almost exactly the same game to be another 30% longer.
This sounds really disappointing, because Legendary, the Marvel superhero game, which I have to say I've not played a lot of, but I've played the Legendary mechanic in the Alien game, Legendary Encounters, and we might talk about that some more next week on the show. The cooperative element in that works fantastically.
Yes, yeah, and everybody, you have to work together.
Absolutely. There's no way of winning otherwise. And so that's the same in the Marvel Legendary, I would assume.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's even more a standalone, like you do a thing on your turn, but you're all basically trying to defeat this stack of villains and bad stuff. But you, it's, I don't think it has the, what's the,
coordinate.
It doesn't have the coordinate mechanic. Although maybe I haven't played enough of the expansions in Legendary. Right. There may be something like that, but yeah.
So with this DC thing though, they've had a versus system, a combative system.
Hang on. That's a whole different game.
Yeah, that's right. I was correcting myself. Yeah. A player versus player system that they're trying to retrofit into a co-op mode.
Yeah, and I think
square
it's because,
peg in a round hole.
Exactly, because people are going, but I don't want to fight against my fellow superheroes. I want to be friends with them. It's like the super friends. to that I say, pah, let's just go out punching. Because I think I'm always happy for more cards. More cards adds more variety.
You're a sucker for that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. You know, look, it scratches the collector itch. But this thing, look, if you want to play a cooperative game, I'd say try Marvel Legendary or a heap of other deck builders, because all this is really doing is making the game drag. And in fact, what happened with my son and I, we got maybe halfway through the stack of villains. It was getting towards the two-hour mark, and I could tell, you know, he was getting bored and restless. And I just said, you know what? I don't think this is going to be fun anymore. And we packed it up halfway through. And that break, you know, that breaks my heart.
It's like just abandoning a book that you're not enjoying, even though part of you wants to finish everything you start.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mentioned to you I saw The Accountant with Ben Affleck, and that thing how, no, I can't find the last piece of the jigsaw, and I can't stop until I find it. You know, I'm like that with a game. I've got to play it to the end.
I wish I'd bailed out of that movie, though, actually, now that you mention it.
So, look, for people who like the DC deck builder, I say feel free to steer clear of the Crisis expansion, particularly number one, except for those extra heroes and those extra main deck cards. I know there's a later small expansion, which is Watchmen, that introduces a semi-cooperative element where you're sort of working together, but there's a traitor.
Well, the Watchmen were always sort of working together.
That's right. And I don't know whether that changes this up or if it's just a little twist on this, but I'm happy to live without the, you know, give me Batman v Superman, not the movie, the game, anytime.
The DC deck builder from the Dice Men, from the sounds of it.
Oh, no. I like the game itself, You don't need this.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, it's the Dice Men Cometh. We're going to come back in a moment with a brand new feature on the show. I'll explain that in just a sec. Mark's looking at me all confused. And we also have to talk about what Neil from polymorphgames.com.au, our sponsor, is doing for our listeners.
Oh, yes.
More deets in a moment on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Hey, it's Trent, Mark and Garth, the Dice Men. How good is this show?
It's awesome.
I don't know. It's okay from time to time.
Would you pay a dollar a week? I mean, given that you get it for free now.
A dollar a week?
Or maybe a dollar a month. Is that more reasonable?
Yeah.
Given that it is, like, free.
Oh, yeah. I reckon it's worth $50 a week. Yeah. I think that's what you guys said you'd pay me when we started this thing, didn't you?
Not unless we get a hell of a lot of support from our listeners via Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Internet money.
The Dice Men Cometh Patreon page is now on. What's this all about, please, Garth?
The fact that we create some form of quality content every week or so.
Some form.
For you and for us. Every single week. We love what we do, but we also love money.
The key thing is we want to spread the word so we can do some advertising, so we can travel to board game conventions, to spread the Dice Men love, to do recordings at conventions so that the people who can't get there can hear all about how awesome we are.
The Dice Men want to spread ourselves across this wide brown...
sunburnt country.
Wide brown land, and that just takes time because we're down here in Tassie. We're going to get ourselves to the major conventions around the country, and that is how we get more listeners. That is how our show gets better, and we need you to help us, please.
We are the most Girt by Sea podcast in all of Australia,
damn,
I would imagine.
Damn straight! So get on to patreon.com, search up Dice Men Cometh, and give us your money!
Or hit the button on the website.
Which website?
DiceMenCometh.com. Oh my goodness, whole bunch of songs there. Now, before we get on to those, Polymorph Games and Hobbies are supporting us, and they are purveyors of the finest games and merchandise, an online store based right here in Hobart, but they sell worldwide.
And they are our sponsors at the Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio.
Absolutely.
99.3 FM.
And we've got an exclusive coming up shortly.
Or do it now.
Really?
Say it now.
Okay. If you want to save more at polymorphgames.com.au after your purchase, type in the amazing discount code PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, PODCAST, and you will get not one, not two, not five, not 7.5% or even 8%, 10% off the already amazingly cheap prices. 10% off the existing prices. Just by emptying your cart and entering the code PODCAST.
We had Morn, Gertrudis get through this. I think that's how you say it. Mm-hmm. And Prince Rama, now is the time of emotion.
Now, Trent, now is my time to get emotional.
Oh,
firstly,
why?
Because you haven't mentioned to me at all this new, what are we going to call this segment.
Oh, yes.
That you didn't give me any warning about.
No, it's a brand new segment, which I've just made up.
Right. You better tell us about it then.
It's called I Want to Play That.
Okay.
I just figure we just need an official segment on the show where anybody's allowed to talk about anything that they just want to play for whatever reason.
Man, we're never going to be short of substance for that because there's so many games we want to play.
Well, having just launched this new feature, yeah. I want to break it straight away.
What?
Because this is actually a period where I want to talk about a game I don't want to play.
What?
And it's...
There is such a beast?
It is the most hyped board game on the planet right now. And I am... my throat's giving out because I've been going, I'm Batman, all through the show and while the songs are playing. I'm talking about Gloomhaven.
What?
This looks like hell in a box.
Oh, my God.
Not interested. Do not count me in.
Hashtag Gloomhaven frenzy. Disclaimer. The following thoughts don't necessarily reflect the opinion of all the Dice Men. Hashtag, what the hell is he talking about?
How hyped is this game? Gloomhaven is number one on Board Game Geek's hotness list. It's number 7 overall. Now, this was a Kickstarter, and I guess we should, for anyone who's been living under a board gaming rock.
Yes, or under the Gloomhaven box,
sure,
it's big enough.
It's like a giant tombstone.
Yes.
That they post to you, and it promises, what is it?
It's basically, I mean, it's been termed D&D the whole world.
Yeah.
Except it's not, you know, that's a themed property that you can't touch. But that experience in a box.
It's Descent squared.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, with legacy elements, with secret elements that you don't even know.
95 branching scenarios. You won't actually play all 95, but your choices will affect.
Yeah, because your choices affect where you can go.
So you can't possibly play them all. There's over 100 hours of gameplay in the campaign.
Oh, at least. Well, with the way we play it, it would be like 300 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how many, correct me if I'm wrong, but when this was initially kickstarted, there were, what, like 2,000 games in the initial print run?
Yeah, it wasn't
not
very
enough.
Many.
Not enough
and
to make the
retailers
demand.
Were sort of crying out for it, and no one could get their hands on a copy.
And yet, with just 2,000 copies in the gaming wild, number 7 overall, like the 7th best game ever made.
Yes, and there's the second printing now on Kickstarter.
Right,
and
right.
On the front page, they've got this big banner where it's saying number 7 Board Game Geek overall rankings.
It was number 11 just
That's
a couple
right.
of days
when,
ago. Yeah.
Well, when they launched, which was only the campaign is now day 16 of 28. So
at
16
the time of
days ago, yeah. This was number 11 on the Board Game Geek hotness. Now 16 days into the campaign, it's risen to 7. Who knows where it's going to end? And there's no more copies out in the real world in this time that it's gone from 11 to 7. And it's ranked as a 9.2 out of 10.
Rubbish.
On Board Game Geek.
There's just not enough people actually playing this thing to justify that result. And I put it to you, Mr. Mark, if
yes.
that's really your name, that this is a demand and a hype that is driven by scarcity. And now they're reprinting it ASAP,
mm-hmm.
quickly, before people realize it's crap. and they're just out there for a buck. That's what I reckon.
Have you? So clearly, you've had a look at some reviews. Did you find a bad one?
Not really, no.
Because this, to me, has been what has blown me away. Is normally with such a hype machine through Kickstarter, very quickly after it ships, what you see is these. I mean, The Others is the classic example we had.
Sure. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, it looks amazing. There's so much stuff, but it's okay.
I just think the sheer weight of stuff in this box. And look, it's an impressive production. I'm not going to take that away from it. It's the biggest board gaming box I've ever freaking seen.
Yes, it's like three Twilight Imperiums.
But ultimately, it's just another little tactical combat game on a grid. Again, I mean, it's
more than that, though.
It's just moving miniatures around on a grid.
No, but you've got
that's all it is.
You've got the campaign element,
and
you've got like Descent, you've got the bits that happen between the campaign scenarios. So going shopping into town, your character development, and then you've got these whole new character classes and races that you unlock as you go.
Do you know, okay, the character development, do you know what the primary, you know there's no dice with this game?
Yeah, it's all card driven.
It's all cards. So your characters get, I actually quite like this mechanic. Yeah. Your characters get...
We are the dice men.
Despite that,
yes.
Every character in Gloomhaven gets two decks of cards. I think it is. One's your character's weapons and abilities, and you've got to, you know, based on however many points your character is at in their level, you only get X number of those. And as you spend them, right, once you run out of cards, you can't reuse them.
Yes.
Like they're gone. But then you also have an ability modifier deck with like plus ones, plus twos, minus one in it. And as your character grows, you can tailor both of those deck.
Mm.
Nice enough little mechanic.
Yeah, sort of that sort of deck building-y type element to it.
But then you don't
got a deck builder.
You don't get to play the same character all the way through the whole thing. You'll max your character up to a certain level or achieve their secret goal, and then you break out the next
secret. Yeah, you retire them.
You break out the next secret character. Mm. I think the legacy elements of this are maybe a little bit overstated from what I can tell.
Well, look,
there's a few stickers and things, but not really.
I heard a classic example where, let's say, because you can do this, let's say you've got two groups playing using the same game, but, you know, one meets on a Tuesday night and one meets on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of crossover between the groups. So, Group A is playing characters 1, 2, and 3, and Group B is playing characters, what am I up to, D, E, and F. But they're playing in the sort of the same world. So there's more than five of them, so I ran out. So you're playing in the same world. So Group 1... on their Monday night, they go into, you know, Ruin X and they discover it and they take the treasure and whatever. So then when Group 2 comes to play it the next night, that cavern is not, it's a wasteland that they can't go in and explore. And it's like the first group has changed the world for the second. I love the thought of that.
I think there's a stupid amount of components in this, a stupid amount of stuff to organize. It's going to be a pain in the backside to set up. There's a massive rule set with it.
Yeah.
Right? And a dumb sounding AI, because there's no overlord.
Yes, yes.
There's no DM running it. So everything's just run by the rules and the AI in there. Credit where credit's due. It does seem to avoid some of the usual fantasy tropes, but there's just not enough going on here that's actually different beyond the sheer size of it. Okay. I mean, look, it's just a case of more is more, if you believe that.
Look,
because really, it's just another tactical game on a grid.
But look, one of the things, and, you know, like I posted this on our Facebook page, there's a great talk by Rob Davial at the Game Developers Conference at 2017 talking about the whole birth of the legacy game, how he started, what influenced him, where it's going. And one of the beauties of the legacy mechanic is if you've got this behemoth, you don't need all the rules up front, because much like how a video game works, where you get to do these little things, and as your character grows, you get access to new abilities, you meet new monsters, new things happen. It's like you start off with a very small subset of the rules, and the rules can then grow
You
go and grow with you.
Look,
so you don't have to, like you when you sit down with a demarker or the gallerist or something, you don't have to sit down and learn all the rules off by heart before you can even start the first game.
Well, we haven't played Gloomhaven, so we don't know, and I don't want to play
it. Do.
I just think that if you want a massive interactive legacy experience, play an RPG. There's no shortage of good RPG systems out there. Okay? I mean, do you really need the fiddly little bits to play with in the out of the box? That seems to me the only... It's just people who just want to play with little, right. their toys.
And look, people are always crying out for that RPG experience. And, you know, like, that's what led me to Pathfinder. That's what's had us playing Descent and Mansions of Madness. But yet, we still fall back and we play actual role-playing games.
Well, one thing I'll tell you for sure is that we don't have time to play Gloomhaven. And we don't have any more time left in the show either. We've got to get out of here. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thanks to our friends at polymorphgames.com.au.
The code podcast.
Mark, catch you next week.
Bye. See
ya. This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to polymorphgames.com.au. You can say hello to The Dice Men on Facebook, Instagram, and www.dicemencometh.com. You can support us by leaving a review on iTunes or by becoming a Patreon supporter for as little as just $1 per month. Thank you.